Okay, and you know they're hitting me hard, right? Those of you who have decided to take it on trust. You can't hear it, but you know. Somebody out there can explain the significance of these roars always over my head. And sometimes I see these trails that just seem to, jet trails that seem to just do a complete 180 or something and then drop vertically. And I'm wondering, what the hell is that? You know, maybe they're sort of like delivering an energy boost to that evil weapon they got up in space. All right. I don't want to lose the majority of you. Seriously, you do not want this to happen to you before you start to believe. Maybe I have to say this every show. Anybody got news on that DARPA disclosure of all those weapons that can kill invisibly and can get rid of dissent without a trace? Please, nobody has said anything, so I'm assuming they're still closed mouth about it. I am struggling with this question of how to adequately convey the risk we face. We have placed ourselves in the hands of a damaged few who believe they must eradicate tenderness itself. I mean, that Adolf Hitler quote was not an aberration. They're targeting the earth connected. Those who love children around the globe is not by accident. You doubt this, even with all the totalitarians across the political spectrum, and I say across because we got them who say they're fascists, and we got them who say they're whatever, democratic socialists, who knows? And the poisoned pedagogues of class across the generations telling us this. If you doubt, you doubt because the facts that support it have been suppressed. How did Bakunin in the mid-19th century know there was a totalitarian reality growing that would only deepen its hold? Because those engaged with the political speech of the day could not help but see it, particularly one as attuned to encroachments on freedom as he. Consider the following from Martin Bernal's Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, Volume 1, The Fabrication of Ancient Greece, 1785 to 1985. Quote, in the last decades of the 19th century, scholars who for various reasons wanted to avoid giving credit to the Phoenicians, and he has a glossary in this book which defines Phoenicia as cities along a strip of coast stretching from present-day Lebanon to northern Israel, the most famous of which were Byblos, Tyre, and Sidon. The name Phoenicia refers to this region throughout antiquity. However, it generally indicates the greatest period in the city's history between 1100 and 750 BC. The Phoenician language, and he has that in quotes, was, like Hebrew, a dialect of Canaanite. The alphabet is often referred to as a Phoenician invention. It may well have originated in the region, but it was developed long before the Phoenician period, unquote, from his glossary. So the scholars of that end of the 19th century, last decades of, began to, and were saying, scholars, European, German, English, primarily German, began to attribute irreducible Semitic elements in Greek and other European cultures to the Assyrians and Babylonians. Even here, however, there was the problem that the normal route of transmission would be by sea, through Phoenicia, or at least North Syria. Indeed, from the late 19th century, there has been a tendency to attribute Oriental influences on Greece to Anatolia, whose Asiatic populations were not Semitic speaking. For instance, the British classicist and historian P. Walcott, whose important work, Hesiod and the Near East, was published in 1966, devotes his first chapter to the Hittites and his second to the Babylonians. However, neither of these, in striking contrast to the Egyptians and the Phoenicians, are mentioned in antiquity as sources of Greek mythology and religion. We know that Plato attributed his philosophy to the Egyptian caste system. And continuing with Martin Bernal, the chapter in Black Athena, The Final Solution to the Phoenician Problem, 1885 to 1945, is concerned with the consolidation of the Aryan model and the denial of both Egyptian and Phoenician influence on the formation of Greece. The denial of Phoenician influence is clearly related to the strong anti-Semitism of the period, and in particular to its two climaxes or paroxysms in the 1880s and 90s and the 1920s and 30s. The first of these followed the mass migration of East European Jews into Western Europe and crystallized around the Dreyfus affair, man accused of spying for Germany. The second came after the critical role of Jews in international communism and the Russian Revolution. Let me say that again. The second came after the critical role of Jews in international communism and the Russian Revolution, and during the economic crises of the 1920s and 30s. From the 1880s onward, the intellectual atmosphere of Europe was transformed by the triumph of racial antisemitism in Germany and Austria and its sharp rise elsewhere. They were used as, and this is key, they were used as a scapegoat for the sufferings of the urban. Division is key. Divide and conquer, trivialized as a maxim, but it is the case. That's like the root among many roots of their hold over us, of their ability to keep us captive. As a scapegoat for the sufferings of the urban workers, in building up an identification of the urban workers and the peasants with the capitalists and landowners against those aliens, quote unquote. Anti-Semitism also gained from the secularization and loss of faith after the late 1850s and the success of other types of racism. The surge of racism was linked to imperialism and the sense of national solidarity built up in the metropolitan countries against the barbarous, quote unquote, non-European natives, quote unquote. One of the extreme Aryan classicists, the German Julius Belloc, who taught at Rome's university for 50 years, from 1879 to 1929, regarded himself as a failure, condemned to exile. He appears to have been kept out of German academic life by the great German historian of Rome, Mommsen. Another reason for Belloc's inability to find a satisfactory position in Germany was that he was suspected, rightly or wrongly, of being Jewish. And my interjection, we're familiar with that dynamic, aren't we? From the shows in which we listened to Alice's analysis of Hitler. Continuing, despite, or more probably because of, this suspicion, he was not only a passionate German nationalist, but also a virulent anti-Semite. It was solely in France, with its post-1870 suspicion of German Aryanism and among Republicans, with their hatred of Catholic royalist anti-Semitism, that challenges to extreme Aryan classicism could be found. There was a strong tradition of secular and socially radical individualism in both the French and Swiss Jura Mountains, which made it the model for the big three social anarchists, Proudhon, Bakunin, and Kropotkin, unquote, from Black Athena, the Afro-Asiatic roots of classical civilization. Is it not time to synthesize and advance the gifts of our big three social anarchists using Rose's energy and fearlessness and our own tenderness to accomplish it?